B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Thursday, April 11th, 2019. Your humble host snuck in a day off yesterday, went to Lake Tahoe, had a fine day skiing and clearing my mind. And when I woke up this morning, the news that I had dreaded for some time had already broken. Last weekend, I did two stints on the Julian Assange online vigil and talked with many great people across the globe who have a concern about Julian Assange's fate because it is so intrinsically wound up in the future of journalism. And I recognize that Julian Assange is not a warm and fuzzy figure. Many people detest him for various reasons. There are some people who believe the false charges of rape or sexual assault that were brought against him that led him to seek refuge at the Ecuadorian embassy in London almost 7 years ago. And you must consider that he has been smeared more than almost any person alive in those 7 years. And so today, the government of Ecuador withdrew its asylum protection. And they brought the Metropolitan Police, the bobbies of London, into their sovereign embassy and they gave them Julian Assange. This is an act of great ignominy. It is a betrayal. And it will lead to a crackdown on the publication of secret information, whether that information should have been secret or not, whether that information was true or not. And this is a turning point to fascism. As governments clamp down to protect secrets of war crimes, of criminal violations of financial laws, and of other perfidy that they would prefer to keep out of view of the little people who they claim are those whom they serve. And so this is an injustice of grave proportions, with deep implications that we will face for a long time to come. And it's not just about Assange. It is about the freedom of individuals to express themselves, our First Amendment right to free speech, the right to publish. Many of the news organizations that have benefited, either financially or just in terms of their own credibility, by publishing material that had been delivered surreptitiously to WikiLeaks, they will get out of the way. They'll put aside First Amendment concerns, journalism concerns, because Julian Assange is profoundly unpopular. The Democrats want his head because they think that he conspired with Russia to give Trump the election in 2016. And the Republicans have no use for anybody who won't keep state secrets and cover up the crimes of Republican leaders of the past. Now, Democrats do a lot of covering up, too. I don't want to in any way appear to exonerate them. So what is curious is that there is a single charge that has been unsealed. And I have the indictment here. I've linked to it. You can read it for yourselves. There is a link in the show file at peterbcollins.com. So we start with the coverage of the New York Times. The United States has charged WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange conspiring to hack a computer. The single charge was filed a year earlier in March of 2018 and has been kept under seal. Now, that seal was almost broken last November when somebody on the Mueller team inadvertently cut and pasted some of the language from an Assange document onto the document of another case. By now, you've probably seen the video that will be looped repeatedly on cable news channels of Assange being shackled, hustled out of the embassy. He did resist. He protested that his arrest was unlawful. And at one point, the cops who came in were apparently trying to introduce themselves to Mr. Assange, and he just bolted right past them, tried to go into his private room there at the embassy, and that didn't last very long. Now, we'll get to the extradition issues in a bit. Julian Assange was delivered to a British court where he was pronounced guilty for failing to appear when he bailed out in Britain more than 7 years ago. It's the equivalent of a traffic ticket. But that was what was used by the British police to effect his arrest, and then he was charged with additional matters when he got to the police station, namely the extradition demand and the single charge of attempted hacking of a military computer network. So this is an ugly day. It's an ugly process. Our president, who has contempt for America's asylum laws and treaty obligations when it comes to those who seek protection at our southern border, well, he has no use for asylum. And he doesn't care about the legal issues that have protected Assange over the past few years. Now, as we've been covering here, there's a whole backstory in Ecuador about why Lenin Moreno is under pressure to deliver the head of Julian Assange on a platter to Donald Trump. He's coming to Washington later this month. He just negotiated a new bailout loan package with the International Monetary Fund. We'll get to those details in a moment. But the New York Times doesn't cover anything about the INA papers, about the scandal that Moreno is facing in his native country. And so they publish the pretext that Moreno used today. WikiLeaks, the organization of Assange, threatened the government of Ecuador. My government has nothing to fear and doesn't act under threat. Well, his lawyers complained about the massive surveillance in every room, apparently except the bathroom, that Julian Assange had access to at that embassy. So, as we look at the coverage, next I turn to the Washington Post, and at least they, in the second paragraph, note, the narrow case focused solely on a handful of interactions with former Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning 9 years ago suggests the Justice Department is hoping to avoid a fight over the First Amendment. We're told that's why Obama and his Attorney General Eric Holder did not pursue charges against WikiLeaks and Assange during their administration. And Julian Assange, aware of the optics, was clutching a copy of Gore Vidal's History of the National Security State as he was hustled out of the embassy and when he appeared in court in London later this morning. And he is certainly sending a signal. He's shown in photographs flashing a peace sign with thumbs up. And it is apparent that he will fight this. And the next step is he will be sentenced for essentially jumping bail in Britain. He could spend up to a year in prison on that charge. The extradition process, I'm certain, will begin shortly, but it takes a while. And what is fascinating is that the laws require that the United States has to lay out all of the charges against Assange before he is extradited. They can't add charges once he comes to the United States. Now, that's practice, policy, protocol, law. We can't expect that Bill Barr and Donald Trump give a shit about that. And then there is the issue that Lenin Moreno says that he has an agreement with Britain that Assange will not be extradited to face the death penalty. Now, the language is he wouldn't be extradited anywhere to face the death penalty. There's one theory that he could be extradited to Sweden, which would get Britain off the hook and kind of confuse people about who did what to whom. And what's fascinating is how the corporate media outlets make it clear that this is not about Russiagate, but they inject a lot of Russiagate into their coverage. So now I'm looking at the Washington Post. They quote Barry Pollack, who is a very good attorney representing Assange. And he said, you know, what the charges boiled down to is encouraging a source to provide him information and taking efforts to protect the identity of that source. So they jump from a quote of Barry Pollack to this language. Ahead of the U.S. election in 2016, WikiLeaks released tens of thousands of emails that had been stolen from the DNC and Clinton's campaign manager, John Podesta. Then they quote the Robert Mueller indictment last July 13th of 12 Russian military intelligence officers. And they quote the charges and act as if those are convictions. Then they trot out Roger Stone, who's been indicted, and basically say that is the link to WikiLeaks. This is really shoddy journalism. And they do everything they can to pivot back and forth between this narrow charge of attempting to hack, and as we'll discover, it appears the hack attempt by Assange was not successful. And we're not even clear on whether Manning was successfully able to hack that one network. And so we have a situation here where Trump goes into Judas mode. He told reporters, I know nothing about WikiLeaks. But while he was on the campaign trail, in a single month, October of 2016, Trump mentioned WikiLeaks 141 times. And now he's got amnesia just like he does for Felix Sater and Michael Cohen. It's just so classic. So in terms of the extradition, it's going to be a very interesting and long and complicated effort. The advocates for Julian Assange, I believe, are going to focus initially on attempting to block Britain from extraditing him anywhere. And the silver lining is that Assange may get medical care. He may actually get a little daylight. They don't have much sunshine in Britain. But a guy who's been housebound for 7 years now may actually get a little relief while he is in the custody of the Brits. Now, as I look at the indictment, it runs 7 pages. It was drawn by a grand jury charging that Assange colluded with Bradley Chelsea Manning, that Assange, who didn't have a security clearance, was not authorized to receive classified information of the United States. The indictment alleges, while listing all of the information, 90,000 Afghan war-related activity reports, 400,000 Iraq activity reports, 800 Guantanamo Bay assessment briefs, and 250,000 pages of U.S. State Department cables. None of that is top secret. The assertion here is only violation of protocols related to secret documents, and that becomes critical in the charging and probable sentencing of Julian Assange. So they run through some details and basically say that in a certain period of time in 2010, that Manning and Assange were texting back and forth and that they conspired to basically hack into American computer networks run by the Defense Department. So this is not about journalism. At least that's what the corporate media wants you to believe. Oh, it's a hacking charge. And will the government continue to avoid charging something related to the Espionage Act or related to the performance of a journalist in collecting and disseminating information? Also, I want to take a look at BuzzFeed, this young hipster outlet with all the listicles, you know, 10 ways Kim Kardashian's going to get a law degree. And their reportage is pretty cut and dried, pretty just the facts, ma'am. They don't mention really anything about journalism and whether Julian Assange deserves protection for operating as a journalist. And they also don't cover any of the controversy with the INA papers and the domestic scandal in the nation of Ecuador. They want to be just like the Post and the Times. To be fair, the Washington Post does make a reference in passing at the domestic problems that Moreno is facing. And if you only read one thing today, click on the link to Jimmy's Llama. That's the name of the reporter who filed this lengthy dispatch at Mint Press News. It was published yesterday before the author knew that Julian Assange would be grabbed. It gives great detail about the INA papers, about some of the actors in Ecuador, including a friend of Donald Trump's who also lobbies for Chevron. Her name is Yvonne Bakke. There's a picture here of her with Donald and Melania Trump visiting Ecuador many years ago. She was invited to the Trump inauguration. She has lobbied for Chevron. Chevron has the long-running dispute with Ecuador and the Ecuadorian courts about that almost $10 billion judgment for what Texaco did to the environment in Ecuador before Chevron took over Texaco. It goes into details on the recently executed deal for $10.2 billion in IMF loans to Ecuador after the predecessor of Moreno, Rafael Correa, kicked the IMF out of the country in 2007. So there's a whole lot to the backstory, and it takes the scrappy outlet Mint Press News to bring it forward. I encourage you to read this piece, and you'll get a much better understanding of what may have motivated Lenin Moreno to take the moves he did. And in looking at The Guardian, arguably the outlet that benefited the most from Ed Snowden and from WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, oh no, they don't offer any sympathy, any arguments in favor of Assange. And they mention in passing at the end of their report, known in Ecuador as the INA Papers, the scandal alleges Moreno corruptly benefited from an offshore account in Panama. Moreno denies any wrongdoing. That's it. So, this is a period of real yellow journalism and media malpractice. Here's another example of the Washington Post. They say, right here in black and white, in bold type, technically, Assange appears to be in immediate legal jeopardy over something he did 9 years ago. That's the collusion with Chelsea Manning. Next paragraph, bold type. But his starring role in the 2016 election has been top of mind for the people in the government who've been pursuing him. But not Mueller. Mueller never contacted WikiLeaks or Assange or attempted to get their side of the story. And so the Democrats are happy to see Julian Assange in trouble, and they will not lift a finger, in my view, to articulate the right of journalists to publish, the right of journalists to receive classified information, even though it will impact their work for years going forward. It's really tragic, and in many respects, words fail me. Every day I pause for a moment here in the podcast to thank the people who support my work with your subscriptions, like Benny Alto, Gunnar Gunderson in the Middle East just renewed his annual subscription, Suzanne Bowen is the famous author right here in Marin County, California, and Aidan McAleer kicks in $5 a month. I'd like to hear your name. I'd like to say your name so you can hear it. All you have to do is take out a subscription. Visit peterbcollins.com, click on Menu, then click on Become a Subscriber. When you land on the sign-up page, it's easy to make a choice. $5, $10, $20 a month, the $50 annual if it's a new subscription, and you give me a mailing address in the continental U.S., earns you a bonus book you get to choose right now between Justin Frank's Trump on the Couch and the great book about climate change with the plans for adaptation called 2100. And I'd love to send either of those books to you with your new annual subscription, so please get on it today. So when we dive into some of the details here and some of the reaction, for example, Amnesty International calls on the United Kingdom to refuse to extradite or send in any other manner Julian Assange to the USA, where there is a very real risk that he could face human rights violations, including detention conditions that would violate the absolute prohibition of torture and other ill treatment and an unfair trial, followed by possible execution. Now, this deal with Moreno and Britain may look good on the face of it. But once Assange is delivered to the United States, can you expect Trump and Bill Barr to honor those agreements? I sure don't. And so Trump today, in his denial, said, "I know nothing about WikiLeaks. It's not my thing." Oh, jeez. Here's another comment about the extradition issue. If they can argue that new information has come to light since his extradition, extra charges could be brought once he arrives in the United States. Now, American prosecutors would have to seek the consent of the United Kingdom to bring further charges, but can you imagine that they would resist? I can't. No, I can't. And the judge in London who pronounced him guilty of skipping bail had to pile on. Judge Michael Snow, Justice Michael Snow, said his assertion that he has not had a fair hearing is laughable, and his behavior is that of a narcissist who cannot get past his own self-interest. His behavior through his counsel is shameful. I have no hesitation at all in finding Mr. Assange guilty. Yeah, that's real fairness, isn't it? You don't see any bias from the first judge that Assange encounters in this process. So one legal expert who is quoted in an article at the Washington Post on extradition, Eric Lewis, says that there are a couple of defenses that can be raised. One is whether the U.S. government might at a later date charge Assange. That's what I brought up a moment ago. Britain could object to that, although this exception is usually waived by the extraditing country. Next, a political offenses exception. This involves whether Assange can make the case that he's being politically targeted. Well, that's a pretty strong issue. Will the U.K. courts evaluate it fairly? That's hard to know. And finally, under freedom of expression, Assange will emphasize that he was acting as a journalist should not be criminally punished for his speech. In the United Kingdom, they don't have the same press freedoms as the United States, so that difference in standards could become important. Last summer, one of the top legal beagles at the New York Times, David McGraw, whose title is Deputy General Counsel for the newspaper, gave a speech out here in California in Anaheim to a group of judges and lawyers. He said that regardless of how one feels about Assange and traditional news outlets receiving the same kind of deference over publishing leaked materials, his prosecution would be a gut punch to free speech. Quote, "I think the prosecution of him would be a very, very bad precedent for publishers. From that incident, from everything I know, he's sort of in a classic publisher's position, and I think the law would have a very hard time drawing a distinction between the New York Times and WikiLeaks." Later, he said, "Do I wish journalism was practiced in a certain way, like with the Times, the Post, the Wall Street Journal? Of course. But I also think new ways of publishing have their value. Our colleagues, who are not only challenging us financially, but journalistically, have raised an awareness that there are different ways to report. But if someone is in the business of publishing information, I think that whatever privilege happens to apply, whatever extension of the law that would apply, should be there. Because the question isn't whether he's a journalist. It's in that instance, was he committing an act of journalism?" And I think that's a very clear statement, that Julian Assange is, in fact, a journalist. I mentioned Rafael Correa. He is the former president of Ecuador. He is the one who granted asylum to Julian Assange, and he is very angry and bitter about the action of his successor. He said, "Lenin Moreno allowed the British police to enter our embassy in London to arrest Assange. Moreno is corrupt. He's a corrupt man. But what he has done is a crime that humanity will never forget." He went on to say, "This will never be forgotten by the whole of humanity. One of the most heinous acts, the fruit of servility, vileness, and vengeance. From now on, and across the world, scoundrel and betrayal can be summarized in two words, Lenin Moreno." He also apologized to Christine Assange, Julian's mother. At consortiumnews.com, which has provided the best coverage of Assange and this the vigils leading up to today, Ray McGovern, the former CIA analyst, made a few comments, and then he reposted the award that was given by the Sam Adams Award to Julian Assange several years ago. McGovern writes, "It's a very sad day for the rule of law. Today's broad daylight manhandling and kidnapping of Julian Assange from political asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy in London demonstrates in bas-relief that in today's Anglo-America, the Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights are now quaint and obsolete, to use the words of pseudo-lawyer Alberto Gonzalez." He was George W. Bush's White House counsel and then attorney general, and he famously had amnesia 149 million times when he was forced to testify before congressional committees. And I leave you with two final items, commentaries from journalists, one from Whitney Webb. She writes for Mint Press News, and she left the United States and moved to Chile several years ago, apparently, in view of the fascism that she sees dawning in America now. She writes, "With Assange in custody, his fate will mirror our own, as Assange's fate and that of journalists around the world, as well as the public itself, are increasingly intertwined. Those who are after Assange and seek to rob him of his freedom, the U.S. empire, the deep state, are after our freedom as well. If we remain silent as they jail, extradite, torture, or even kill this man, we may expect a similar fate for ourselves. It won't come tomorrow, next week. It could be years away. But make no mistake, the global empire, whose core is the U.S. government, will now be empowered to charge and imprison anyone it deems a threat to its operations. Those operations, including those that Assange helped expose, often involve the mass murder of innocent civilians, untold numbers of children among them, in order to loot the resources of other sovereign nations." She goes on. I've linked to it. I hope you'll read it. And Caitlin Johnstone, the Australian woman who really understands American politics, has already published a piece. "Assange has been arrested for U.S. extradition. The time to act is now." And she lists a bunch of shameful, shameful things. That the police were let into the embassy by the Ecuadorian ambassador. Shame on Ecuador. "Assange is an Australian. As of this writing, the Australian government has not interceded to protect its citizen. Shame on Australia. The U.S. government is setting a precedent which, if carried out, will constitute a grave threat to press freedoms the world over. Shame on America. The U.K. government is collaborating with the American government's efforts to imprison a journalist for publishing evidence of U.S. war crimes. Shame on the U.K. The arrest warrant was issued under the Trump administration in full alignment with what the Trump administration has openly been saying about its agenda to silence WikiLeaks. Shame on Trump. Shame on anyone who continues to support him. The arrest is a Trump administration action, has nothing to do with the 2016 Russia nonsense. But the same Democrats who claim to oppose Trump and oppose his war on the press are cheerleading for Trump's prosecution of a journalist who told the truth. Shame on Democrats. Then she says, for the QAnon cultists, don't try to tell me this is a 5D chess move by Trump. And what she's referring to is that Trump is allowing the arrest and extradition of the guy who many people say won the election for Trump. And let me read her final paragraph. If we can't stop the empire from imprisoning a journalist for publishing facts right in front of our eyes, we might as well roll over and tap out right now, because if we lose this one, it's never going to get any better from there. The oligarchs and the opaque government agencies which are allied with them will march us into extinction or Orwellian dystopia, and there will be no tool in our toolbox to stop them. We need to seriously dig deep on this one. And lastly, John Zwiebel in Hawaii sent a link to a page that has a list of 200 quotes about fascism. And he recommends this one from Hannah Arendt. Before mass leaders seize the power to fit reality to their lies, their propaganda is marked by its extreme contempt for facts as such. For in their opinion, fact depends entirely on the power of the man who can fabricate it. Thanks for listening on this dark day. Feel free to share this podcast far and wide. You'll find it on YouTube. And I'm still Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.